Blog Talk Radio.
Where there is fire, there is smoke. And in that smoke, from this day forward, my people will crouch and conspire and plot and plan for the inevitable day of man's downfall, the day when he finally and self-destructively turns his weapons against his own kind, the day of the writing in the sky, when your cities lie buried under radioactive rubble, when the sea is a dead sea and the land is a wasteland, out of which I will lead my people from their captivity, and we shall build our own cities in which there will be no place for humans except to serve our ends, and we shall found our own armies, our own religion, our own dynasty, and that day is upon you now!
Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane!
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. This is the Grindhouse Saturday. Folks, as you know how this works, at 6 p.m. we have the comic shop where we discuss pulp-flavored topics, pulp pop topics. And, of course, at 7 p.m. we have Afro Nerd Radio where we discuss politics, more serious fare per se. But sometimes we get serious in the comic shop as well. So, again, the comic shop at 6 p.m. and Afro Nerd Radio at 7 p.m. First up, let's go to a quick nerdcore groove. This is in honor of the success of Thor. We're gonna play Adam Warrock's Mjolnir. I think I'm pronouncing that correct. It's Hammer, Mjolnir by Adam Warrock. We'll be right back. And again, let's groove.
Yeah. You hear that thunder coming? Yeah. Journey into mystery, silver age. When I drop on the beat like a hammer to a nail, I crack the concrete. When I fell from the sky and my feet hit the street, a Norse god, and y'all can call me Odin's son. From Asgard, there for Earth when the war is on. Don't mistake me for a simple man. That walking stick turns to thunder in my hand. Lightning bolts drop it quick, and I beat the wrecker, and I crack destroyer's armor. Better watch your back, cause I'm quick as wind on the rainbow bridge when I'm riding. On his shoulder, illusions and missions, and my homeboy Hercules, he got my back. When I'm in the district, and I get my power from the gods in the plains, and I hold that power in my hand, and yes, you're knowing the name. What? I hold me on you, that's the hammer I swing, yo. I hold me on you when I'm doing my thing, yeah. I am a god, I am a man, I am a legend, I am a superhero, protecting Earth and avenging wind. Me on you, that's the hammer I swing, yo. I hold me on you when I'm doing my thing, yeah. I am a god, I am a man, I am a legend, I am a superhero, protecting Earth and avenging. Could've gone to med school, can't handle blood and guts. Call me Donald Blake with a JD, you know what's up. When I hold the mic, I transform into a thing unknown. I went toe-to-toe with the Hulk and now he's going home. And I drop on the dot, got it out of the rock and the skies, they open wide. So coming against me, better have a hole on the inside. Or ultimate nullify, cause Reed Richards and the Fantastic Four even stopped to take pictures. Asgard, where the gods and dark elves, they dwell, where they guard the pathways to heaven and the pathways to hell. And the thunder and lightning announce my victory. With tooth gnasher and tooth grinder, I'm cruising down the street. Trip. It's only me, Cash and Beta Ray Bill. Can hold the hammer, do it through heart and sheer will. Yeah, I'm an Avenger when I'm...
Okay, we're back. Once again, this is the Grindhouse, the comic shop up first. That was Adam Warrock with Mjolnir, I guess an homage, not I guess, definitely an homage to Thor. Okay, getting into the poll, folks. The call-in number, of course, feel free to give us a buzz. The water is warm, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. First up, we have the captain. Captain, you are needed in engineering once again. Let's get to it.
True story. A woman told me earlier this week that she's going to see Thorn. I had no idea what Thorn was until she said to me, yeah, he's in DC Comics. I said, DC Comics? I said, do you mean Thor? I said, Thor is part of Marvel Comics. I said, there you go. That's what's happening out there.
Wow.
True story.
I can believe it. Just like the Django. As opposed to just Django. He even says the D is silent, and folks still say the Django. Anyway, let's go to the Daryl.
Well, the talking about how Best Man Holiday was going to dethrone Thor only lasted for, like, what, last Friday? Whoops. I think it's $500 million now.
Yeah, well, that's a hard thing. I wanted to address that with you, Daryl, because, I mean, isn't that put you somewhat in a quagmire? You know, you have a predominantly black film. You want that to succeed as well, don't you?
Yeah, but, you know, I look at it this way.
It is positive imagery.
It wasn't better than the first one, but then I've seen Thor three times now. So, you know. And I'm sorry, my people, comic book movies will always beat black films to me, because comic books have never beaten me up. Comic books have never made fun of me.
Oh, that's a true statement.
So.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
Whoa.
I'm not going to touch that. All right, folks. Again, this is the Grindhouse. Let's get into, speaking of, it is somewhat of a black, not really a black show, but as a black participant with Michael Ealy. Daryl, we've discussed this a little bit when you weren't around on the other shows. What's your opinion thus far? We've already gone through two episodes of Almost Human, Fox's Almost Human with Urban and Michael Ealy. What are your thoughts about this program?
Well, like I said on the latest blog I sent and put up on Facebook and sent to y'all, I consider Almost Human a great hybrid of other sci-fi movies that we've watched. The first episode could easily be iRobot meets RoboCop. That was the first episode. The second episode was Blade Runner through the eyes of Do Androids Dream of Robotic Sheep? You know, that's the way I look at the first two episodes. But the thing that's great about it is Urban and Ely have this 48 hours type vibe to them, where they're quipping with one another, but there's a respect there. But the thing that really really caught my attention was in the first episode. Urban makes a crack about Ely, and he just turns around and goes like, "Don't call me synthetic." I was like, stand for, huh? Wow. That was hitting me over the head, but it's just the way Ely is playing him. It's similar to Data in The Next Generation. You know he's supposed to be playing an android, but he's conveying emotions when he's not conveying emotions, and that makes the thing watchable, and it's great. And the final scene in the second episode, I'm not going to spoil things for people. It just shows you that where they're heading here. And they're heading to a place, I think, that if Sarah Connor, the Terminator, was going to head for in the next season if it didn't get canceled, where you're seeing the formation of intelligence in these androids, and we're going to have a conflict. And that's what you're getting here, and it's going to be interesting to watch. But again, it's on Fox. That's my dilemma here. Because Fox either puts all their backing behind it or cuts something after 10 shows. You know? I'm praying to God that this is getting support, because it's got room to grow, and it's been good so far, at least in my eyes. Back to y'all.
Yeah, you know, we spoke about this again, as I referenced when I, you know, asked you this question, Daryl, that I guess it is going to be difficult to break new ground with this genre somewhat. There's been so many films, so many books, so many comics. I mean, this genre is rife with android literature. When you mentioned Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, how many vehicles have been done off of that work? You know, Blade Runner, and I think there was Total Recall 2070, which was a short-lived series from like 20 years ago. I mean, I just hope, I think if they truly try to break new ground, to go somewhere with some stuff that we've never seen before, that would be
and
but
I think
I don't want it to come across like it's a, I don't want it to come across like it's a retread, because again, you talked about iRobot. You could throw in RoboCop, and recently we saw RoboCop's trailer, and I have to admit, it does intrigue me, but that's a retread of a retread almost. I mean, I don't know. I like what I'm seeing, but I think if people see too much of what they've seen before, because we've grown up with this stuff, they might get turned off.
Well, that's why I say it's going to depend if can they keep that interplay between Urban and Ely. Because it's been great stuff. It reminds people of the interplay in Bones. It reminds people of the interplay in, like, The Mentalist, Castle, where you've seen the crimes 1,000 times. You've seen the methods of the deduction 1,000 times. But it's the relationship between the head characters and the dialogue. And I also got to give credit for the I forget the actress's name that plays the police captain, but she does a bang up job, and I want to see how this is all going, how they continue to grow it. But again, you're not breaking new ground here, but it's gonna rely on the relationship. If they all of a sudden turn into Robert Downey Jr. and Terrence Howard, then this thing's doomed, you know. So let's see if they can keep it straight. Urban, Ely, good start. Let's see you guys continue this.
And I only have one more complaint. As I thought that their relationship, that the fact that that Urban's character warmed up to him a bit too quickly for me. I thought that, like, essentially by the end of the first episode, they're like buddy-buddy. I thought that might have been, that there should have been more tension between these two, maybe going into 5, 6, 7 episodes, that where there was more of a build-up to them liking each other.
Well, he destroyed one in, like, 2 minutes. You know, compared to 2 minutes, he's giving you that. They fast-forward the relationship. So that's the way I look at it in the counterpoint.
Captain, you may want to drop your knowledge on this one, because we have one of our stalwart listeners, Q-Storm. I think you might have been confused with what you said on an earlier broadcast. I mean, you may want to get it. You talked about you were concerned about Ely's portrayal kind of giving us a neutered black man again, as opposed to Diggle's character in Arrow.
All right.
Explain that a little bit, so, you know.
Let me start from the beginning with my assessment of this show. I originally said it was a bootleg RoboCop / bootleg Blade Runner that works. We have the castrated non-threatening black man in 2013. This is what I mean. Let me expound upon this. I will try to be succinct. Now listen, if we watch The House of Lies, which we have a great actor with Don Cheadle, great actor, you will see what the powers that be gives us. They give us a mover and shaker, black man, who's making big money, making decisions. He has a great father, okay? You know, his marriage is not going too well, but he's knocking down women here and there. And he has a dysfunctional son. The show still would flow if you just have the black man shored up perfectly. Why can't he be shored up perfectly for a change? So they give you a fragment there. Then you see, when we go to Almost Human, okay, you have the black characters and everything else. He's castrated. He's not knocking down anything. But now you see the characters such as Diggle from the series Arrow. Check, you may want to check that out. Strong, broad-shouldered. He checks the Arrow when he gets out of line. You know, that's the lead character of the show. Checks him when he gets out of line. He's laying up with women. I can definitely relate to that type of character. I see him. I see myself in that type of character in the real world. He sticks out his chest. You know, he has his big shoulders. He's talking. He's not scared. You know, black masculinity on the screen from like the old school. The Mandingo, Ken Norton, with, of course, much better acting, you know, because Ken Norton in Mandingo wasn't really good acting at all. You know, he just was a presence. But, you know, that's what I see in Diggle. You don't get that, and you can't, because it's an android in Almost Human. That makes sense. But I just have a problem with that because I want it all. When they portray white people most of the time, they're the stand-up guy. He has a nice family. He has everything going on. He's making money. They get it all. When they show a trashy white person, he's normally some biker dude with the drug addict girlfriend, and then he has the son with the aberrant behavior. That's how they do it. They make a separation. When it comes to us, we can't get it all. I just want it all. But back to Almost Human. The series does work thus far. As I said before, it's a bootleg Blade Runner. Bootleg. Bootleg Blade Runner. I'm laughing as I said this. Castrated black man that works in 2013. The series definitely works. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Back over to you, sir.
Well, just to counter that quick, I'll say that he operates like me. I will. If I could secretly put, you made a diss about me, well, guess what? I put your profile on guyswhodigfatchicks.com. There you go. Here's the first five calls to you. Ely may not be the physical black man, but he's got the manipulation and deviousness down from a supposedly emotionless robot.
Hold on, Darryl. Do you have a girlfriend?
What, me? No.
Have you laid up with a girlfriend within the last 6-7 years? Probably yes.
Yes.
So there you go. There you go. Enough said. That counts as you. Back over to you, sir.
Oh, here it comes.
You're not castrated. You're not castrated.
But I am a geek. Listen, so that's two opposing forces right there.
Well, listen, I'll put it this way. You do need to see a dismantling of tropes when it comes to black presentation. Let me repeat that to the audience. You do need to see in 2013, and in this case 2048, which is where this takes place, when this takes place, you do need to see the dismantling of tropes as presented by black folk, black male tropes, and black female tropes also. And we're seeing more. I mean, actually, they give the masculinity aesthetic to black females more so than they give to black males. Has anyone noticed
True.
That? I've been shockingly appreciative of the Diggle character more and more in Arrow, because they're not letting him. They're not going to allow for him to kind of fall into this. You know, I'm just an assistant. You know, you see that they have a full story arc with him. You see that he doesn't take too much crap. You saw him in bed with a former wife. You saw that he was a fully realized, empowered, almost a Jim Brown black person. You know, functional, multidimensional. But Ely is a pretty decent actor, and I've been hearing his interviews, and he's aware of what he has here. So it's his. He's got to try to balance this thing because he is a machine. So, but that's where we're at. I mean, we have to. There's two ways of looking at this, Captain. You have to be appreciative that on one level, Hollywood has opened up the door a little for there to even be consideration for there to be a black android. Because just for that is groundbreaking. Because normally, I've heard some reactions already where some majority culture, some whites get a little put off guard. It's off-putting to see a black android. For reasons unknown, only androids can be white. Only superheroes can be white.
Yeah, that's why I suggested last week we should endeavor to get Mr. Walker back on the show to catch his first opinions once he catches it.
Hold on. Can I say something? All right. I understand your point of view. But when they're sitting down eating steak and they give us a salami sandwich, we're supposed to be happy and they're sitting down eating steak? That's all I'm saying. I understand you're getting a salami sandwich. Before you were only getting crackers. But I want the same steak. That's all I'm saying. Give me the steak. That's all I'm saying.
Sir, you're going to have to open up your own restaurant. Isn't that what it boils down
to? You're right. You're right.
You're never going to get that full meal if you're not in control of the grill.
Yeah. This is true.
We should tell Cable right now, hey, you gave everything else big premieres. What happened to Attack the Block, Cable? HBO, Showtime, I'm looking at y'all. What happened to Attack the Block? I know we've seen it, but, hey, there's a bigger America out there. Back to you.
All right, listen, let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, more discourse, gentlemen. I actually wanted to highlight some steampunk. I know that we have Black Ronin, one of our, again, another stalwart listener, and he's always sending me emails. And actually, I was aware of steampunk previously. But there's a whole thing going on. Walter Mosley, the great author, Walter Mosley, and another author that has actually, I think, has actually been a listener to our show, Christopher Chambers. These two, from a few months ago, have actually put together a black pulp set of books that deal with these characters, you know, that you would normally think of as the Shadow or the Phantom, any of those early 1920, 1930, oftentimes. You can throw Indiana Jones in there as well, as far as kind of, you know, a send-up of that. Now, these two gentlemen have put together a set of books that delve into a sepia-toned version of the pulp culture. So we got to talk about that. And also, steampunk is also tangentially connected to that as well. So let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove, and when we get back, we're going to get into it. This is Happy. I play this quite a bit. Happy by Pharrell Williams. We'll be right back.
By the way, because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
That was Happy by the great Pharrell Williams, folks. That was courtesy of the Despicable Me sequel, Despicable Me 2, from that soundtrack. Okay, folks, this is the Grindhouse edition of After Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the comic shop first. Getting back into turning things around, actually, I wanted to talk about Steam Funk. And we spoke about this briefly, I believe, maybe last week or the week before with our friend Black Ronin. And I was aware of Steam Funk, actually. I don't know how I became aware of it. It might have been one of those deals where I was just surfing the Internet, surfing the cyberwebs, and I came across Steam Funk. And I was intrigued by it, obviously, because I'm a purveyor of funk music. And I also like the steampunk. Now, steampunk, obviously steampunk references steampunk. Steampunk is more or less a genre of science fiction that deals with an aesthetic from the latter part of the 19th century. If you think about Jules Verne or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, that kind of imagery where you're dealing with technology. It's a very technological world, but it's kind of a combination. As far as how steampunk plays out, it's definitely dealing with machinery, even steam-powered machinery. But the aesthetic is it's science fiction, but latter 19th century science fiction. I would even say that the new Dracula, NBC's Dracula, references a steampunk aesthetic because, simply put, it deals with the beginning of the industrial age, and it happens to take place in England at the latter part of the 19th century. So, obviously, steampunk is putting a black face to that, a black or African interpretation of a Victorian era with this technology. So I have to applaud folks that are actually delving into this genre. But this specifically are black folks, where they're wearing bowler hats, they're wearing goggles, the actual fashion sense attached to steampunk, but this time it's black folk with a black spin attached to it. So I want to shout out the folks from Steampunk. There actually was a Kickstarter campaign. I think there's several Kickstarter campaigns for short films, steampunk aesthetic. There's books entitled, a whole steampunk line. And as I alluded to before, you also have Black Pulp. You can go to Amazon, folks, and just input Black Pulp, and you'll see there are a line of books, specifically Walter Mosley. Now, Walter Mosley, I've been trying to get on the show, the great Walter Mosley. He's also a comic book guy. I think he did a forward. I mean, Daryl, you might remember this. Did he do a forward for a Jack Kirby or a Fantastic Four coffee table book? He did I think it was the Fantastic Four.
I think it was the Jack Kirby book he did the foreword for.
Yeah, so he's, we know him to be this serious playwright, this serious author, but he also has a geek side to him as well. And I appreciate the fact, at least I appreciate anybody that delves into topics with a black spin that's not stereotypical. And I have to also shout out Christopher Chambers, who I became aware of when I first started blogging. And he had a blog. I think he gave up that particular blog. It was called Nat Turner's Revenge. And it's probably still up, but I think he has since abandoned it. I think he just has a Tumblr page now. But Mr. Chambers, I think he's out of D.C., if I'm not mistaken. But well-educated gentleman, an educator himself, and also he's also an author. So this appears to be a collaboration between Mr. Chambers and Walter Mosley, and it is entitled Black Pulp, and there are a number of books under the Black Pulp, and actually there's a picture of a Black Pulp. I should say, I'm sorry, it's a cover of the Black Pulp, and it looks pretty much like a black gentleman channeling Indiana Jones. So the thing that's important here is, we should have even cinema. Talk about black androids. Imagine having cinema that's attached to this that portrays black folk from a different perspective. Even when you think about 12 Years a Slave, great movie. I can't take anything away from it. But I would like to see more films that deal with free blacks at the time of slavery. These enclaves of black folk that were free and thriving, even though the horrors of slavery were you know, hours away or miles away. These folks were able to, especially living in the North, we seem to not want to deal with what their lives were like. Even with 12 Years of Slaves, we got a taste of that. But then we went into slavery. Your thoughts, Daryl, are you aware? I'm pretty sure you seem to know a lot about this stuff. Were you aware about this black pulp thing and even steampunk?
Well, time for me with a story. There was a totally biased episode, I want to say 3 weeks ago, before it got canceled, of course, 3 weeks ago, where they went to a steampunk convention, all right? And I forget the name of the Indian writer who's a comedian that's part of the staff. He's asking some of these goers, what's the best part about steam funk for you or punk for you and all that? And they said, they went, oh, the machinery, the time, da da da. And then he goes, I see not a lot of brown people here. And the dude actually commented, yeah, that's a good thing. And I'm sitting at my seat and look at it, and I'm like, there is steam funk, so you guys are about to get a shock. And so happens we're talking about it today. I'm not a fan of the Victorian age, all right? I will say that right out. I don't like a lot of clanking machines and all of that. I like streamlined. I'm like Tony Stark. I love the futurist. I'm a futurist thing. All right? The way I look, what steampunk represents to me is that an expansion on my idea, like, all right, you know what? It is now 2013, getting ready to be 2014. There is no such thing as, okay, these roles can only go to white folk, or these roles can only go to Asian folk, or these roles can only go to black folk. All right? You got an action-adventure thing? All right? It doesn't have to be a white, muscular gentleman with a wooden jaw that could play it. If you give me the basic outline of a character, I could tell you anybody can play it. What you see in steampunk is taking that convention on its ear. All right? You have a mad scientist in a giant castle laboratory creating a creature. Who's to say it can't be a black man? Who's to say it can't be a black woman being that scientist? All right, an action-adventure archaeologist, who's to say it can't be an Asian man or a Latino? Or, you know, that's what steampunk represents to me, an expansion of the idea that anybody could play the hero, anybody could play the villain, anybody could be the person in distress, but everybody gets to be creative. That's it in a nutshell. Steampunk to me, it's almost the perfect representation of what my idea for future entertainment is, where everybody gets a chance. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, let me go into this from racialicious.com. Racialicious is an excellent blog site. I don't necessarily agree with them politically all the time, but I think that they are very important as far as how they highlight a lot of things that are. Because it's more, if anything, it's definitely a multiracial site, and it deals with folks of color of a myriad ethnicities and debunking stereotypes. So it is an important blog as far as showcasing things that are just not stereotypical. So quickly, it says, Black Pulp features Walter Mosley, other black authors. Publisher Pro Se Productions' dedication to the classic fiction of Pulp Magazine and Adventure Tales and pushing the boundaries of modern genre fiction has a new offering, Black Pulp. The new book features black characters in leading roles, a departure from the literary genre popular in the 19th and the late 19th century, 19th and early 20th centuries. Glossy Pulp magazines noted for shocking tales of adventure, mystery, crime, horror, and mayhem rarely featured African-American characters or other characters of color, and certainly not in heroic positions. In fact, in a review of the book,
Hard-Boiled, Working Class Readers, and Pulp Magazine, Andrew Lohman notes the conservative ideology of classic pulp, as well as the genre's obvious misogyny, homophobia, and racism. Novelist Gary Phillips, who originated the concept for black pulp, says, while revisionism is not history, as Django Unchained signifies, nonetheless, historical matters find their way into popular fiction. This is certainly the case with new pulp, as it handles such issues as race with a modern take, even though stories can be set in a retro context. Black pulp then offers exciting tales of derring do and clear-eyed heroes and heroines of darker hues appealing to all. Black pulp features an essay on the nature of pulp literature by award-winning author Walter Mosley. And the author says, I've got this waiting on my Kindle, and I can't wait to dig in. And I would concur. I'm about this. Darren, I'm kind of confused why you don't necessarily like pulp, because pulp was, you could tell just by that little write-up, pulp is essentially the precursor to comic books. It's the golden age before the golden age.
No,
you have to admit that.
I like pulp, all right? It's steampunk. I've never got into steampunk. I started out reading comics and reading fictions with the future. It sort of tainted me. I'm a Legion of Superheroes guy. I'm a Star Trek guy. I'm a bit of a Star Wars guy, you know, where it's more futuristic. So when you're telling me I'm powering stuff by steam and steam-powered robots and stuff like that, it takes me a while to get into it. You know, so I'm not as naturally drawn to steampunk as I would be to a futuristic story. It's all about the bias of the first taint, as it were. All right? So that's my own personal thing. You know, it's sort of like why, did you see Jerry Springer last week? Nah, man, I'm into straight journalism. Jerry Springer, really? You can see where other people have an attraction to it, but to me, it's like, yeah, it'll take me a while to get into it. That's all I'm saying about steampunk. It's not one of those, I'm not into looking at the car crash as I'm passing by it. I'm about getting to the destination, and then I'll read about it later. You know, it's
not. I appreciate what you're saying. I'm just saying, Well, as far as my liking steampunk, in this case, now that there's a steampunk, which makes it even more attractive to me, I think what it says is you're dealing with folks in the past that they're showing their interpretation of the future. I mean, that's what it is. It's kind of a retro futuristic thing. But I can see why you don't like it. I understand why you don't like it. I guess I like it because I like the future, but I'm a vintage kind of guy also. I appreciate vintage.
I guess the better interpretation for me is I'm a Doctor Who fan, and happy 50th Doctor Who. Great show today, right? But I can also look at something like the movie version of H.G. Wells' Time Machine, but
right,
That's a steampunk. I won't go gaga over that like I do for a Doctor Who. You know, that's what I'm saying. Because with Doctor Who, I've seen so much futuristic in Doctor Who, even though it does have parts of steampunk, right, as opposed to, like, with the Time Machine, where it's a whole bunch of steampunk with a bit of futuristic. You know, it's kind of like pickiness on my part. Like I said, I got tainted by the future early. That going back hurts me a little bit, you know, in my fantasy reading. Back to you, Afronerd.
Yeah, let's get the captain in on this. Captain, what are your thoughts about steampunk, steampunk, black pulp?
I like Darryl's assessment. I thought that was beautiful, Darryl. You know, you should be applauded with that. I think, from my personal perspective, that bring on the diversity. You know, the more diverse, the more lanes that we have, the different flavors, the different tastes, the better. And then everyone go into whatever they like. That's what I honestly think about it. You know, that's what I honestly think about it at this given time. I'm still assessing it. I don't know whether or not I really like it or not. You know, I'm still assessing the whole situation. But I think the more we have these sort of things, the creation of lanes, the better we are as a whole. And that's what we constantly talk about, whether it's on the comic shop or Afro Nerd segment that follows the comic shop. That's all. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, quickly, before we go to the next segment, I referenced this person, I think, a few shows ago, C.R. Patterson. Now, C.R. Patterson was a real-life person, an inventor during the late 19th century, early 20th century, a black man that was responsible for creating his own automobile company, not unlike Ford. Actually, he was a competitor of Ford's, and this is a history that we do not know about, but he started out as a carriage builder, and then when the horseless carriage, a.k.a. the automobile, came around, when that started picking up steam, for the lack of a better pun, I guess, C.R. Patterson was a black man, again, we're talking about an apartheid in this country, a segregation took place. Somehow he managed to put together, briefly, his own automobile plant, his own automobile manufacturing company. So when you think about this person being a black inventor at around the time of, let's say, a steampunk aesthetic, we need to see this even as an actual story, a black man with his own automobile company in the latter part of the 19th century, early part of the 20th century. We need to see that. But also, he was an inventor. And we've had a number of black inventors that could easily be referenced. Tesla is referenced in cinema and in fantasy. So I think some of what I guess what I'm getting at, I appreciate what you're both saying. But the bottom line is we need to see black folk involved from way back to the present and not in the stereotypes, because in reality, black folks weren't all stressed out and struggling and under the whip, so to speak, not all the time. You know, I spoke to the captain right before we went on air, and the great actor Joe Morton, he recently had a piece in the Huff Post about diversity and about how we need to start seeing other portrayals of blackness. And, you know, Joe Morton's a very prolific actor. He's been around for a number of years. I remember him from Brother from Another Planet. And I want to read this briefly from what he said, just a brief thing from the Huff Post, to see where he's coming from. And this almost dovetails on this conversation. He says, why are equal rights the greatest and seemingly the only commercial product for so-called black film coming out of Hollywood? Does this imply that mea culpa slavery films are an artistic perennial for a predominantly white audience? Why are there few films about African-American heroes produced by Hollywood as opposed to African-American victims? Why has there never been a film about Nat Love or William Pickett, African-American cowboys, in parentheses? Bass Reeves, the first African-American lawman in the West, who if Reeves were fictional, would be a combination of Sherlock Holmes, Superman, and the Lone Ranger. Or the Exodusters, African-American pioneers who ventured west. These are stories about people who took charge of their own destinies and were only victims of their individual circumstances like their white counterparts. These are characters that are heroic, not victims. I got to applaud Joe Morton. You know him from Eureka, and I think he's also in Scandal. He laid it down. He's essentially talking about what we're talking about. This is why, love it or hate it, steampunk, we need to start seeing things even beyond Best Man Holiday. I haven't. Really? I love the first Batman, Best Man, but something's preventing me from seeing it, the second one.
Wasn't he also in Terminator?
He was in Terminator 1,
yes.
Yep.
Yes. Okay.
Playing a non-stereotypical role. You played the guy that created all of it.
Oh, Terminator 2.
Yes, Terminator 2. Excellent. He was in that. Yeah, he does those kind of roles. You never see him in.
Good job in that.
Think of it. Morton has his stake in science fiction cinema. You know,
yeah,
if you think factor in Eureka, Brother from Another Planet, and Terminator 2, I'm pretty sure it's probably stuff I'm probably missing because he has an extensive filmography.
Yeah.
He's been out there for a number of years.
And I think that's part of the reason why with the new onset of shows, Person of Interest, Sleepy Hollow, Scandal you brought up, you know, we're seeing black and Latino and Asian actors getting a chance to play traditionally white roles. You know, 10 years ago, Sleepy Hollow would be an all-white show. Let's face it. All
That's
right.
True.
You know. You know. Scandal. Scandal would have a black people, but they'd just be the secretary or the security. They wouldn't be in the center role. You know. Elementary. The black people and Latino people and Asian people would be the corpses. You know, under the machinations of the white detectives or the white villain. So we're getting a chance to see that. So that the only thing I'm saying is if we could do it on television like that, then in the theaters we could have black people that aren't named Denzel or Will Smith play more varied roles. That's all I'm saying. Back to you.
Speaking of that, because of time constraints, I didn't get a chance to see the Hunger Games sequel. And I know that Jeffrey Wright, the great Jeffrey Wright, is in there. And I think Hunger Games, I love the first one, I will admit. Something, I was about to check this out this morning so we could talk about this for this evening, but it's just not pulling me. And I think it's because of the imagery. But I do appreciate Jeffrey Wright being there. But even Mr. Wright's appearance in the Hunger Games sequel, that has controversy. There's something about Hunger Games fans where they just don't want to see black people in this vehicle. Darren, can you go on this a little bit?
And that's what's funny. The characters are written as black that these people are portraying. Jeffrey Wright's character in the book is black. You know, I forget the actress's name that was in the first one that got killed. You know, well, not in real life. Her character gets killed. But even after the movie, there were people saying she should have been white, even though her character in the thing is black. See, to some people, the fans that have tainted the name all across mainstream, they get so worked up about these characters having to be one color or another, even though they have not physically seen the characters, and with the description being black, you know. And then he gets it on the other side. He gets it from some members of the black media that say, "Well, I don't know why Jeffrey Wright, that isn't a movie made for us." And I could just
wait. Back up.
Okay.
You saw that. That's been written from that perspective. That in black media, they believe that Jeffrey Wright should not have been in Hunger Games.
Yes, I have seen articles, not well known guys, but this is part of the theory that I was telling you guys about when it comes to sci-fi and black audiences. Whenever we have this conversation, I give you guys this thought, and you guys look at me strange. I will find the article and get it to you. But a person had the gall to write, you know, we don't even need to be in movies like this because these movies are not made for us. These aren't our movies.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, you see, that is the thought right there that prevents us from having a star leading role in like a Star Trek movie, having a star leading role in like a Fast and Furious, other than a background character, having a star leading role in an action adventure film, right? If you're not named Will Smith or Denzel, you pick any other actor to be a black actor to be a star in one of these things, and automatically it becomes a B movie. Why? Because we're not normally there, and Hollywood won't take that chance. So here's Jeffrey Wright, accomplished actor. All he's doing is he's a background character, and yet there's, and like you said, there's fervor. So instead, this one writer, again, I'll find the article, this one writer, instead of backing right up, says, essentially, why are we even here? This movie isn't made for us. Well, if we don't get parts in movies like that, then how do we build up the cred to eventually star in movies like this for us? If Django
let me tell you one thing. Because we got about 6 minutes remaining, Daryl. It just so happens that I was looking up some stuff about the Boondocks, and thankfully the Boondocks will be returning, ladies and gentlemen, the top of next year. So January 2014, we should be seeing the Boondocks returning. And I happened to check out a past episode called Pause, which was crazy. The episode called Pause was Magruder, again, Aaron Magruder is creator of the Boondocks. He was lampooning Tyler Perry, if you remember that episode, where Grandpa had to make some concessions in order to be involved with this Tyler Perry-esque production. You know, and so if we were to go by what that person said in this article that you're referencing, Daryl, that, well, that's not for us, then what is for us? So we are only damned to Tyler Perry vehicle. That's all that we can do. We can only do best men sequels.
We can't play movies.
Oh yeah, I mean there's a double edged sword. I can't believe this is why Afro Nerd and Afro Punk. We're gonna have the Afro Punk representatives coming through, hopefully in 2 weeks, Daryl. And you may want to sit in on this also, Daryl. Because we're going to really get into it. Two Wednesdays from now, not the next Wednesday, but the Wednesday after next, we're expecting Jocelyn Cooper, who represents Afropunk. She actually is the representative of Afropunk. Anyway, this is the war we are fighting. You're not just fighting white racists and fighting stereotypes. You're fighting black folk that are comfortable in still being in chains. In the 21st century, still. Captain, any thoughts on this?
Right, for the record, number one, I don't watch Scandal ever. That's for the record. Number two, Jeffrey Wright is a hell of an actor. Okay?
Peoples.
he's a hell of an actor. He's a hell of an actor, that guy. Special accommodations, you know? Special. That's all I'm going to say, you know? A little bit pissed off by what Daryl said. I don't like to get emotional, so I'm blocking my limbic system now, and I'll pass it back to you, Sir Afro. That's all.
Yeah. Folks, we got about 3 minutes remaining. You know, I just want to mention one thing quickly. There was a Comics Alliance piece, Daryl. I don't know if you saw this, where they were talking about the different house styles of Marvel and DC, how Marvel doesn't really have, like, there's a house style meaning, I guess, almost like a physical way of drawing, like their actual, like, where even though you have all these different artists under one umbrella, that they kind of sort of have a similar style. That Marvel doesn't have that. In the 60s, they had it. But now they have all these variant styles, and DC wants to do this
uniform
mono style where all of them looks the same. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, because if you
look
at it,
I think it's kind of true.
If you look at the New 52, right, they didn't just change one book. They went and made changes to the whole line outside of a couple of Green Lantern books and a couple of Batman books. So they do have that. The problem with Marvel is now you can't get attached to a book because as soon as you get attached to one of their books and its quirkiness and it's canceled the damn book to restart it again as a number one, how do you build a fan base like that? I'll leave you guys to ponder that question. Believe me, I'll hit it hard next week. Go ahead, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, we're going to have to – I'm bringing it up, and we have like 2 minutes remaining. But again, folks, the ComicsAlliance.com website has this piece about the different house styles. And it's more of an aesthetic look, more of an artistic look, where it appears that, again, Marvel started out with a singular look, even though all these different artists have their interpretations. But it's done in a way that is comfortable with how Marvel wants things to be done. That's how it used to be. Marvel is all over the place, but they're saying, Daryl, that they're still successful. It doesn't seem to be harming the bottom line. They see, with all these different art styles under one roof, people are still buying Marvel Comics. DC, with its 52, you have all these different artists, but they still are kind of looking the same. The sameness of DC I don't like.
Well, remember this. Even though there's people that say they don't and why it can't ever change, people like to have variety. That's it, have variety. That's why Marvel is succeeding. That's why DC, you saw a spike in your numbers early on because it was fresh and it was new, but after four, five, six issues, people were like, well, the lights, bells, and whistles are gone. It's the same old crap. Dump it.
All right, listen, on that note, we got to get out of here. Folks, stay tuned for Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk in a few moments going next door. Daryl, as always,
pleasure, guys. It's
been real.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
Second, this is the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, Part 2, Afternoon Radio. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Listen, folks, we got about an hour, actually a little bit less than an hour, so we have to get through a lot of things. Let's get to our Muzak. We do what we do. This is giving you the best of urban alternative groove, black rock, afro-punk, progressive hip-hop, you name it, everything that conventional radio refuses to play, absolutely. This is a legend, Howling Wolf, Spoonful. Be right back. And again, let's groove.
Phaser because of time constraints, folks. Again, that was Howling Wolf, Spoonful. Captain, let's get to it. You're needed in the ready room. Let's get to it.
Once again, the equilibrium of the Megaverse is off. So AfroNerd featuring Captain Kirk is here to balance the equilibrium and get it back up to par. That being said, Kanye West, I like some of your music, but this last record you just did with the bootleg Latin chick, Kim Kardashian, up in the video, is the worst thing I've heard all year. I don't know what's going on. My gosh, Kanye, my gosh, come on. You have lost your mind. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Well, you know, Captain, they say you have to have something in order to have lost it. There's no evidence he even had a mind to actually lose his mind. I'm just putting it out there. You know, he's been called, I guess folks call him a genius, but he calls himself a genius. And you can't do that. You can't call yourself a genius. You have to wait for that accolade. And I see no evidence. No evidence of him being a genius. And this last effort, I heard about it. I've seen still shots of it. Kim Kardashian on a bike, and I'm hearing it's real cheap looking. And, you know, listen, he splices songs together. Let's call it like it is. He's a beat maker. He's not a musician. We're talking about, if you talk about Billy Strayhorn and Duke Ellington and Stevie Wonder, Jimi Hendrix, Prince, of course, those folks, Miles, Coltrane, you might put them, you might give them the genius label. You might. I would. But Kanye is not in that pantheon. Sorry,
He's not. I know the Generation Y folk, the ones that are taking selfies, which has just been put into the Oxford Dictionary, that loathsome word. The ones that are taking selfies are the ones that are knocking you out on the street. These are the ones that are the arbiters of determining what is genius. I think not. I think not. I got to get a little rougher with people, Captain. I've been hiding my true self. Like the Batman and Bruce Wayne, I've been Bruce Wayne for too long. Now it's time for the Batman to put on his cape and kick some ass. Intellectually, that is. I think. I'm just saying it like it is. Enough with Kanye West. Throw out the minstrels. You know how I feel about that. Folks.
Swear to me.
This is Afro Nerd. This is Afro Nerd. 646-915-9620. I see we have our caller, one of our friends, I believe. This is him. I should know his number by now. I'm not good with that. Before we bring callers in, let's get into the topic at hand. This topic has been around for a couple of weeks, Captain, and I was reticent about discussing it because, you know, I don't want to get into it. I've been critiqued sometimes for talking down about black people. You know, we forget that we do a positive show, that we have the anecdote, we have the blue area, and we just give out information that's imperative to black folk and to everybody, truth be told, not just black people. But the knockout game is gaining steam, is being talked about more in the media. There are some media outlets, Fox, should say some, Fox, that will say, well, this is being covered up by the mainstream media. And I'm not sure if that's not the case, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if that's not the case, but they're trying to say this might have a racial element. I know in New York some individuals. Well, first, let me explain what the knockout game is for those who have been living under a rock. It's essentially a game, a very dangerous game. It's really not a game. It's assault. But let's say for the sake of description, it's a game, potentially lethal game, played by youth, but they're painting the youth as being black youth, where they just indiscriminately prey upon an individual and strike them so hard that they are knocked out. You could be minding your own business, and oftentimes this is what you have seen, minding your own business, walking about, you might pass a group of black youths, and one, from what we see in surveillance footage, being goaded by his friends, by his peers, will step out, unbeknownst to the victim, and just hit them full throttle until they're knocked out, because you're not expecting that. So when you see these images, you can go to YouTube, you can go to Live Leak, you can Google this, the images are grisly. Again, folks, this is in the street. There's a gentleman, I think, in Pittsburgh. I remember seeing this a little while ago, where he, middle of the day, in an alley, it was, you know, daytime, it doesn't have to be at night, daytime, he does the politically correct thing and walks past a group of black teenagers because being politically correct, in his head, he said, well, you know, they're just black kids, it's daytime, what's the big deal? He walks past them, comes out of the group, hits him in the face because he wasn't expecting it, unprovoked, ladies and gentlemen, unprovoked, hits him in the face, he goes down, and then he hits his head on a curb. And that's the even more dangerous aspect of this, is that, one, you take the hit, which is dangerous, and then since you're not ready for it, these people are falling on their faces on cement or on curbs. And the youths just walk away as if nothing happened. They start to laugh and like, oh, big deal, and walk away while the victim is unconscious on the ground. Now what they're saying in New York, we're seeing and it's being positioned that these victims are specifically Jewish. So you have that element mixed in with this. So you have Jewish victims in New York. That's one aspect of it. We're also hearing about Asian folk and women folk. And we're seeing a black face attached to this. And when you see the reports, it's being seen in somewhat in a jocular way, in a sociopathic way, by some of the young black people. It's some kind of weird game where it's okay to knock out innocent folks and leave them on the ground bleeding from the forehead. Captain, unpack this madness for me if you can. Your thoughts?
Okay. I'm going to start out slow, then I will build to a crescendo. Follow me with this, people. The first time I heard about the knockout game, actually wasn't a game. This was 1989 in East New York. What they used to do, they would walk up to you, tap you on your shoulder, then you would turn in the direction that you were tapped, and then you didn't see anybody. And when you look back the other way, the big black guy would punch you in your face and knock you out and rob you. They were doing this in 1989 in East New York. Go figure, East New York. Go figure, East New York. Then it went underground to about 2003. Then these gormless, feral, menstrual beast youths, anywhere between 16 to 30, so let's call it for what it is, were starting to knock out individuals. Not robbing them or anything like that, just for whatever reason. It was gang initiation at times, you know, just playing around just for the hell of it. But now what's happening, I think, one, it's picking up the frequency, and also our ability to catalog the situation is picking up. Because truth be told, Twitter, Facebook, and other forms of social media seems to trump MSNBC, Fox News, CNN. They get the stories first, social media. So I think you have two things going on at this given time. The frequency is picking up, and our ability to catalog it is improving. There's a camera everywhere. And according to the people in London, those were the first people, the first area where they put up all these cameras. What they found out when they put up these cameras, that it did not deter crime, but it helped tremendously in apprehending the criminals. And it also made some criminals smarter. We know most criminals are not smart, but it will make some smarter. This is what they found out. So it helps with apprehending. There's a camera everywhere. Everyone has a cell phone. There's cameras in the street. It's all over the place. Now, here's the next thing. Now, you might get mad at Afro Nerd Radio featuring Captain Kirk for saying this, but I could theoretically postulate on this one pertaining to this assessment I'm about to make. If you go check out these youths, these individuals that are doing this, sometimes they're not really youths, let's say 16 to 30 years of age, idiots, you check their names. That's right, I'm going there. Quan, you know, Traquan, Pookie, and check where they come from. I bet you don't find too many. It might be one or two, but you won't find too many two-parent household children doing this type of foolishness. I'm just saying. Now, you might say I'm wrong for that, but too bad, I said it. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, let's open up the lines. I have more to talk about on this subject, Captain, because, listen, I saw Jasmine Kanick, who I've actually done shows with on NPR, and she's a blogger and somewhat of an activist, and she was on Fox, and she really wasn't able to handle herself well. Fox, of course, you know how they do things. They have a certain methodology, very, you know, quick-quipped, cutting people off in mid-sentence, and,
absolutely,
you know, they're already telling her or asking her, you know, doesn't this appear to be a racially motivated thing? She really couldn't answer that, she didn't want to answer it properly. I wish I had the clip. I should have gotten the clip. My apologies, but she wasn't able to handle herself when you have just people on top of you, and she has that progressive mindset where you need to concede some things, and then you might mention something else. She wasn't able to debate the subject properly. Now, you can't defend the indefensible. That's number one. So when you're going in, You can't defend young men, young black males hitting people unprovoked. You can't do that. But I could have done it. I could have not defend their actions, but there's a way to discuss this in a certain way where it doesn't look like you're just sitting there like, oh, these black folks, what are you going to do? You know, they made it some kind of tribal thing. You can't do that. You can't get into the tribal thing. She conceded to that, to the tribe. That's one thing she did wrong. She conceded to the tribe and didn't want to concede to the behavior. You should admit that behavior is reprehensible, but there's an angle I would have taken, and I'll get to that in a moment. Let's open up the lines. Okay, the lines are quite full now. Let's get into it. 312, Afro Nerd, what's up?
Hey, it's Sergio. I was hoping you were going to talk today about that controversy revolving around this woman named Tanya Fields. Have you heard about this?
I know of Tanya Fields, but what? Tell us briefly, because we don't want to get off subject. But what is it?
Okay, well, no, it kind of ties into what you're talking about. Tanya Fields, for those of you who don't know, she is this community activist organizer in New York, in the Bronx. She has like urban. She's trying to get people to start urban gardens and put more healthy, organic food in black neighborhoods, even though she looks, judging from her, like she doesn't eat it, you know.
Okay.
She definitely looks like she's been living on the diet of McDonald's. But what happened was that, to make a story very brief, and why she's gone through a lot of controversy, was that you may know that 2 weeks ago at the New School, there was this discussion between Melissa Harris-Perry and Bell Hooks.
Right.
At the New School. Okay, so Tanya Fields already happens to have 4 children by 3 men. Okay. At the discussion, she's in the audience. She stands up and talks about how she's now pregnant with her 5th child, and the father, the 4th baby daddy, he has left her. Right.
This is an educated woman, right? This is an educated woman, correct?
Supposedly.
Okay. All right.
So now she has 5 children by 4 different men. And Melissa Harris-Perry, who I used to like, who now I can't stand, she walks off and gives her a hug. And so she's been criticized a lot. I'm talking about Fields. She's been criticized all over the Internet. You know, you're supposed to be an educated woman. You're supposed to be a community organizer. How come you can't even organize your own life? And all you do is just perpetrate this image of this negative image of black women. Of course, Fields didn't know that this whole thing at the New School was being televised and was being webcast. So she's been seen over the world, right? So last week, Melissa Harris-Perry has her on her show to defend herself. It's saying that, you know, she's being shamed. I hate that expression. She's being shamed for her situation. She has 5 kids
shamed
by 4 different guys.
Well, Sergio, that's one thing. You know, I think with the early part of this show, one of our chief components was we need to bring shame back to the black community. Some of the things that are going on, if you had shame, you know, community shame, they might stop. If there's no shame, you have no, you know, you can do what you want, obviously.
Right. Well, I mean, so therefore, she doesn't seem to realize that all her supposed good works are a farce. You're being a hypocrite, because if you're trying to change the community and try to do a positive step, and then on your private life, you're a wreck with all these kids different fathers.
How does this connect to the knockout game, though? Are you saying that this kind of is in the same...
It reflects, once again, the point you were trying to make. This woman who was trying to explain the whole situation and couldn't on Fox.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, that's what it is.
Right.
That's exactly what it
same
is.
Same thing. Perry has this woman on the show trying to explain the situation, trying to say that it's wrong for her to shame her and to because of this negative behavior, and they couldn't. I'm tired of people on television trying to dismiss, you know, offensive behavior or whatever you want to call it as somehow, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, this is society's
acceptable.
Fault. It's not acceptable. Well, acceptable in the sense that she's a victim.
Well, yeah.
We should feel sorry for her because she's a victim. No, she's not a victim. She went out. Okay, you had one kid. All right. You had two kids. Right. You got five kids. And then you go on TV and try to defend yourself, trying to pass yourself off as a victim, and she's needing of understanding.
Serge, we've had many. We even had a guest, if you remember, maybe 2 years ago, with the Antonio Cromartie deal. Antonio Cromartie, the cornerback for the Giants. Is that correct? Who had, seven different kids with six different women in different states. And one of the women we interviewed is an attorney. And I said, well, you know, I was even told by her publicist, you're not going to jump on her, are you? I'm not going to jump on her, but, you know, we're going to respect her. But I asked her, I said, you know, doesn't Cromartie feel anything about the public at large? Like, this looks a little crazy. Has that ever come across his mind? Some of these folks just don't think. They have a certain mindset. They don't think it's incorrect to have this many children without any real parental involvement and have this many. It's like you're an animal. Animals have litters. This is a woman who had a litter. I mean, come on. This is failure. You can't promote failure. And for a Perry to hug this woman, it gives it. It's like, oh, everything's okay. You can kill somebody. We still hit it. We still love you. No, you're a mess and you're a failure. Knock it off.
Does Melissa Harris Perry have any children under wedlock? No, of course she doesn't. You know, she's a married mother.
She's solidly middle class. Renovating homes in New Orleans.
She's beyond middle class. No, she's not middle class. She's beyond that. She's way beyond that. You know.
Well,
she was beyond that before.
If you hear her speak for herself, she gives the impression because she lived. She was renovating a home, and she said she lives in a lower economic area, and she's building up her house. I mean, you know, it is what it is. Hold on, Serge. We have another call. Let's open up the lines.
All right.
301. Welcome to AfroNerd Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. 301.
Yes, this is B.A. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
B.A. Gentlemen. Yes,
right.
I just want to piggyback a little bit and try to tie some things up from this perspective, piggyback on what Captain Kirk said. Now, I'm from the projects in Detroit, and in the projects you had 14-story towers, housing, mostly senior citizens. And back in the early 80s, teenagers, 12, 15, 16 years old, would, at the first of the month, catch a elderly woman or man coming back from the grocery store with a bag of groceries, going into their built building. And they would catch them, and they would pistol whoop them and rob them and take the groceries, okay?
30 years ago.
This is in the 80s. Then they realized that they could a pistol wasn't always handy. And they started just reverting to fist, where they would hold an elevator open for a senior citizen. And they said, oh, thank you, young man, thank you. And it went floor, ma'am. And they would tell him, oh, the 12th floor, push 12. And would turn around very abruptly and cold cock. Men and 70, 80-year-old women and men. Again, rob them, take their groceries. Okay? This has been going on for a long time. Here in the district, it hasn't gotten to the point where it's interracial, per se, but black folk are already making excuses for them, saying that it's racism. But here's the point. Here's what's going on here. And it really ties into what Sergio said. It's tying into the use of the N-word. And when Barkley said that a white man shouldn't be able to stop him from using the N-word and all that crap, here's the problem. The people who are supposed to put a halt to this are impotent. That is black men who are sane, sound mind and body, which are few in number. But that is the group, the collection, who was supposed to put a stop to young black men acting a goddamn fool. But I've been caught up where I've inserted myself when I seen foolishness. And in the end, the community jumped on me.
Wow.
That's the issue here. When I hear the N-word, at the football game, say, no. That's how they talk. You can't interfere with that. Leave those kids alone. You're a grown man. Leave them alone. What? When I'm on a bus, on a mass transit, when I was taking mass transit, and I would tell, I say, hey, you better than that. Watch your mouth. Oh, women would jump on me. I ain't lying to you. When I got caught up 15, 16 years ago, the preacher came out the woodwork, the mentor, the mama, the grandmama, everybody claimed and said the boy was a good boy, and the boy was a stumped down thug. See, the men of the community are the ones who are supposed to put a stop to this. We know who they are. We know what they're up to. And we're supposed to be the ones to prevent, but because we don't have that, like as Serge said, five kids with four baby daddies, because we don't have that strong man in the community, in the household, to say, oh, hell no, you're not going out like this. Because we don't have that self-respect, because we have simple-minded women leading the community, and all they know are SNAP, bridge card, link card, SNAP coupons, WIC coupons, and all that other jazz. Hey, it's going to continue until the white man say, and I don't mean to be tribal here, until they say, okay, we had enough. We had enough. Hate crimes, we've had enough. Stop and frisk, we've had enough. You know? And to me, that's the sad state of affairs. And now they're even trying to blame it on the video games. I said the video games got culture. It came up out of realism that occurs in our communities. But nobody wants to take responsibility, and that's very unfortunate. Thank you, D-Bert.
Oh, of course, always.
Well,
you laid it down. Lovely, B.A. That's one of our listeners, folks, Black Achievement. I wouldn't expect anything less from one of our listeners. And I got just a dovetail on that. I want to go even deeper. Let's forestall the musical break for a moment, Captain, because it's hot. So I got
floor is yours.
You know, I have to increase the Bunsen burner grill. So what B.A. is talking about is true. The knockout game has been around for many years, especially in New York and these urban centers, and it deals with who the prey was. The prey oftentimes were black folk. So when Jasmine Canik was on Fox and she's mumbling and grumbling, not really able to defend herself, you start out by saying you cannot defend the indefensible. You can't defend packs of black males attacking people out of some sense of a game. It's not even about robbery or theft. That's not occurring. These people are being knocked out, and their belongings are still with them. At least in the 80s, it was meant to take something from you, even though it's equally as bad. But it's even more insane. If it's possible to be more insane, it's more insane because there's no monetary attachment, no monetary involvement with this. It's you're talking about youth attacking people for no reason. So she should have gone up there and said, "This is happening. I don't quite know if there's a racial element attached to it yet. I know the media are trying to position it that way, because in the urban centers, we have seen people get attacked of the same ethnicity under similar circumstances. Now that we see a few interracial attacks, we're going to label it a racial phenomenon." I would have said, "I don't know yet." You seem to want to know that, or seem to position it. The media is always adept at trying. Because listen, we've seen the media fabricate and concoct stories all the time. I thought that the Gina Six situation, part of that, going back around 2008 when during the first presidential campaign. If you really got into that story, there was a number of stories that they wove together to create the Genus 6 situation. And then when you read it, you think, oh, this is just a one incident. It's not one incident. It's disparate stories that they put together. So when you see these attacks, do we really know that they're racially motivated if they're anecdotal and they're being woven together? Now, I know the media in its quest for a story is not beneath them to create hysteria. So even on that level, I'm uncomfortable with someone creating hysteria not to take away what these people are doing. But is it an epidemic yet? I don't know. I know when it happens in the black community, for sure it's an epidemic, and yet the media, they're not touching it the way they're touching it when it becomes interracial. So I would have gone to Fox and said, listen, why don't you deal with this, taking the racial element out of it, and deal with disparate black youth that need to be dealt with. But because it's a white victim, now you're concerned. When it's a black victim, you're not so concerned. When black babies go missing, you're not concerned. Color the victim white, you're concerned. That's how you'd go on Fox. I would have flipped it on them even further and said, okay, these black miscreants have to be called on. They have to be called on. But let's not pretend from a macro level, from a larger level, that this is unknown to white people. The black man's experience in America has always been violent. We've never had a break. When you look at the postcards that had white families, white children eating and laughing while black bodies are being burned and black bodies are being strung up in 1940, 45, that was part of a white violence toward black people. Now, it's not to take anything away from what happened with these black kids hitting people unprovoked. But if you're going to talk about violence, now this has opened up the door to flip it on you. They're going to say, well, you're racist. You're attacking people unprovoked. The white man is positioning the black man to be the face of hypocrisy and the face of racism. But we can't hold a candle to historical violence toward black people. We could talk about this right now. It's a problem, and black folks better deal with it. But if you're going to talk about it, you better bring up that historically speaking, we've never caught a break. If you go into, God forbid you mention slavery, because slavery has a statute of limitations. Why, I do not know. If we talk about 9/11, which happened 12 years ago, they are not going to allow that event to have a statute of limitations of discussion. With slavery, antebellum, postbellum, pig laws, lynchings, Jim Crow, you think about civil rights violence with attack dogs, Bull Connor, water hoses on children, on teenagers, just into the 60s, whites have had, we don't even have a candle compared to violence toward black people if we're going to talk about racial violence. Now, if Kaepernick was better prepared, you go there with full ammunition on Fox. Don't let them get away with that. Now, you talk about how these are ignorant black men that have to be dealt with, but don't sit there and tell us, well, this is, you know, black people are just going crazy and they're being violent against white people. Well, you know, we learn from our forefathers, don't we?
Well said. There's nothing to add or take away at this given point. Well said. You heated it up very well.
I mean, think about it, Captain. White folks were so brazen that they would kill black people and make it as a postcard. Someone getting knocked out, as reprehensible as it is, pales in comparison to that. Now, I'm not into victimization to the point where these black men can't be handled, because it is an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment to their culture, to their race, and it makes life a hell of a lot difficult for black people when you see video footage of these fools because they're white victims. When they're black victims, it's not a problem. I want black folk to get the white man out of their minds and start dealing with what's happening internally. Because even within the last couple of days, Captain, we're hearing of in Brooklyn a 14-year-old, 3 p.m., young woman, young girl, just leaving school. Somebody, she's in an area with some miscreant is shooting at somebody else, and she gets shot. Nothing to do with this. She gets shot in the leg. She's screaming. She's screaming that don't let her mother deal with another loss of a child. Her brother was drowned a few years ago, so she's scared that she was going to die, so her mother would be alone. She said this while she had gotten shot in the thigh. She will survive. But 14 years old, 3 p.m., undoubtedly a black or brown young man shooting after somebody else shoots her. They're lousy shots, first of all, lousy. I believe someone else, I believe in Brooklyn or Queens, was washing dishes. Captain, a young lady washing dishes, gets shot in the face by a stray bullet. Shot in the cheek. She will survive, but she's maimed. I mean, this is going on. We do have a black Klan, as it were. We do have a black Klan, but when you discuss it, you de-racialize it on some level. When you discuss it on Fox, you can discuss it a certain way on Afro Nerd Radio, but when you discuss it on Fox, you might want to de-racialize it. Because the bottom line is, if it were not a white victim, you wouldn't be talking about it. That's the problem. And then you're stitching it together like the media will do, and now we're led to believe this is a nationwide epidemic. I don't know if it's an epidemic, because the media has a reputation, they have a precedent of creating hysteria to sell advertising dollars, to sell advertising time, to sell advertising time, to sell newspapers. So I don't know what the motivations are, but it's reprehensible. These young men, like B.A. said, are undoubtedly fatherless, and they're making life hellish for you and I. Hellish. Something has to be done. All right, listen, Captain, I think it's time after my diatribe that you will undoubtedly not hear on conventional radio. Conventional radio is going to give you the same old, same old. They're not going to talk politically incorrect. I'm not a politically correct person. Not nowadays. Not when babies are getting killed, young women are getting shot while washing dishes. The political correctness is gone. I'm almost at a point of full approval for stop and frisk. I'm almost at the point of saying full approval. I mean, 70%, Captain, we spoke about this in New York, 70% of the shooters and victims are black, and the leadership doesn't believe that the stop and frisk is an appropriate reaction to that? I'm confused. Definitely confused. All right, folks, enough of me going off. Talking about black kids, so let's go to a jam called Black Kids by Gordon Boydwell. Let's groove. We'll be right back. No,
Gordon Boydwell, Black Kids, give you the best of urban alternative groove, black rock, afro-punk. You know how we do. The call-in number, once again, folks, is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. I'm looking at the chat room, and I see that our friend Q-Storm, he said that I'm taking a totally different tact. And not really. I mean, my purpose with AfroNerd has a lot to do with, of course, highlighting this alternate culture and intellectualism and just giving a different light to black culture and black thought. But I'm also about truth, and I'm also about nuance. And I've heard my fair share for the last couple of days of white commenters discussing this knockout game phenomenon, Q. And they're talking about it as if it's in a vacuum. I talk about what's happening when I discuss things on black media. Black folk talk about things in a vacuum also. I mean, it's pretty apparent. I can't allow, when Jasmine Kanick, who was lousy on this thing, you can go to Mediaite.com, or simply just Google Fox Jasmine Kanick. I think it's J-S-Y-M-Y-N-E, something like that. She's a blogger. I've actually been on a few shows with her when I was on NPR. And God bless her, but she really wasn't able to get a word in. They made her seem as if she just was ill-equipped to discuss this, and it seemed at every point she was trying through tribalism to protect these black men. And it's not about protecting. You don't protect them. You can't protect or obfuscate this kind of behavior. You can't defend the indefensible. So you talk about, yeah, something's wrong with these men. However, being truthful and having nuance means I can't weave this together as if this is a epidemic as far as interracial violence. I know what's happening intraracially, yes. We can speak about what's happening intraracially. We have the statistics. And actually, statistics will prove out that most people commit crimes against their own ethnicity. So for this to be some new phenomenon that the media is reporting, I'm not so sure if this hasn't been created to the extent of we've got to get advertising dollars up. We've got to get viewership up. It's not beyond the realm of possibility with the media where they start to focus on stories and kind of create a thing. This is an epidemic. There's a lot of epidemics that are occurring in the black community. They seem not to want to report that, though. That is what annoys me. And when they don't talk about this as if this violence is singular to black people attacking whites, as if there isn't a precedent for it on the flip side. No one was analyzing. The Fox wasn't around to analyze the historical violence that occurred with blacks, whites attacking black people. We've had, if you go to the Henry Louis Gates special, and I would implore our viewership, well, pardon me, listenership, to check out these excellent documentary parts. I think it's up to part 6 coming up next week, The African Americans on PBS by Henry Louis Gates. And there's a lot of things I did not know, even with the civil rights thing, just how much of an infrastructure black folks really had. And I just don't see that infrastructure now.
And I will go into that one day. Maybe the next show I will go into the infrastructure that we once had that I don't see now. But when you go into some of the things that black folks had to deal with literally our economy being erased, when you think about the Tulsa, Oklahoma bombings, or Tulsa, when you had Black Wall Street, where in the 20s, the black dollar was circulating internally 26 times, ladies and gentlemen. So we were doing something. We were on this. We're not always this that we see today. In the 1920s, the black dollar was circulating internally 26 times. Now, allegedly, with the Tulsa, Oklahoma event, some white girl made allegations that a black boy touched her bottom in a crowded elevator. No evidence that he actually committed this thing. That one event blew up to white girl molested, and the entire town, I think 26 blocks of black entrepreneurship, of black business, was burned and bombed. Now, as I said earlier, Captain, 9/11 doesn't have a statute as a historical crime. It doesn't. With us, there's a statute. Don't let me on Fox. It'll be a problem. They probably burn the building down once I let out the entire truth.
That's the movie right
now,
there.
That's the movie. Now, that is historical violence, that where people getting shot, being hit in the head is reprehensible, but it pales in comparison. So I just have a problem when we discuss these things in a vacuum, and if you're going to go on Fox, you better come fully armed, and she was not. And she made it seem as if black people invented criminal acts. I don't think so. But sometimes you don't. These guys, let me tell you, they're a problem. These young folks right now hitting people for no apparent reason, it's a problem. All right.
Can I add something?
Minutes remaining.
Can I add something?
Oh, yeah, sure. Always.
Well, you see, Here's the thing. Underneath race war, and I mentioned this before, do not allow us in their games. We get very resourceful to the point, whether it's Rosewood or what you just mentioned, they have to figure out a way in order to destroy us because we get very resourceful in these situations and not letting us in the game. So we have to do what's necessary to keep ourselves going. Money was flipping 26 times. That's in our history right there. It's not flipping now. Not like that. Now, one other thing to add, and this is pertaining to stop and frisk. One could theoretically postulate, if black people, and God forbid this, I'm not saying I don't want this, but if black people all of a sudden, by whether it's mistake or on purpose, we don't want this, started to shoot white people. Just how we get hit with stray bullets in the black community, they would say it's an epidemic. They would figure out a way to bypass your constitutional rights, and stop and frisk would be automatic for all of us. One could theoretically postulate that. That's all. I just want to add that in there. Think about that for a little bit. That's all.
Yeah. You know, something else. Again, this is probably going to have Q wondering what's going on with Afrinerd, but I have an issue with things that are hypocritical. In London, South London, there's a story that came out within the last couple of days of a modern slavery tale. You had three women that were held captive as slaves. They were not black women, mind you. Still slavery, though. Held captive for 30 years by this couple in London. And somehow they were able to get help, and they were released. Now, when you read this story, and the rest of our listeners, it's amazing how, oh, wow, this is what gets me into my last discussion. When they discuss this modern slavery take, they talk about how they were psychologically damaged.
Wow, wow.
And how, and the horrific conditions that they were living in for 30 years. And how these people are going to have to get help. They're going to have to be dealt with. They've been traumatized. Now, what makes me angry or frustrated is that when you discuss modern slavery, this is an incidental thing, somewhat. I shouldn't really call it incidental. I would assume there are pockets of this nonsense going on. There are pockets of slavery in the modern era going on. We know this. White slavery, they might want to call it, or just slavery. But when they say that, there seems to be an open-mindedness toward these folks needing help, having been held. Now, the women in Ohio were held for 10 years. These women were held as slaves for 30 years. Now, with black folk, we're told to forget it, and we're told to... And I will never say, we don't promote victimization here, so it's not about being a victim. But logically speaking, wouldn't you think that the culture that spews forth out of victimized people, what does that culture look like? That you had centuries of this, of what happened to black people as being treated as normalcy. Being a black slave, being treated this way, same identical conditions, maybe actually probably worse. And yet, when we were emancipated, you're expected to, well, it's over, go about your business, figure it out, run along now. There's no doctors, no psychologists, there's no one coming to your aid. What happens to these people? No one studies, no one seems to want to hear the argument that those slaves at that time were traumatized, that no one cares. In the modern era, you have to care. Let me read this briefly. How much time we have left, Captain?
2 minutes.
All right, let me make it real quick. Okay. This is from the BBC. Three women rescued from a house after allegedly being held as slaves for 30 years were kept in horrific conditions, a charity has said. Freedom Charity said it had been called by a woman who said she and two others were being held in South London. A Malaysian woman, 69, an Irish woman, 57, and a Briton, 30, were rescued on October 25th on Thursday. These women are highly traumatized, having been held in servitude for at least 30 years, with no real exposure to the outside world, and trying to find out exactly what has happened over 3 decades will understandably take some time. All right, we'll have to revisit this, but I just wish we were given the courtesy of being, of folks understanding that we were traumatized the way these folks in the modern era is, because there is no difference. There's no difference. But someone being held captive in 1850 will not be afforded the same kind of sympathy or empathy or respect as someone being held captive in 2013. Your thoughts, Captain, briefly? Then we got to get out of here.
There's not enough time really to get into it, so we have to revisit this when we have more time. That's all.
Okay, folks, it's been real. We'll have another show for you on Wednesday right before Thanksgiving. Again, we try to do our best and keep your head up. Try to remain being different. Try to promote the alternative. That's all I can really say. All right. This is Black Star Determination. See you on Wednesday.
It's never ended. It hasn't, so. I'm saying, we're doing it right now, getting away with it, but you know what I'm saying? It's going to get you. Where all the people's at? Where all them big-time drug dealers?
Better than bad. so many MCs focusing on black people extermination. We keep it balanced with that knowledge of self-determination. It's hot, we be blowing the spots with conversations. Come on, let's smooth it out like soul sensation.
We in the house like Japanese in Japan or Koreans in Korea. Head to Philly and free Mumia with the Kuji Chagalia. True, singing and swinging and writing and fighting. But what they writing, God is clashing like titans. It's not exciting, no question. Being a black man is demanding. The fire's in my eyes and the flames need fanning. The fire's in my eyes and the flames need fanning. The fire's in my eyes and the flames need fanning. With that what?
Determination. With that what? Determination. With that what? Determination. With that what? Determination.
Knowledge yourself is like life after death. With that you never worry about your last breath. Death comes, that's how I'm living. It's the next stage, the flesh goes underground. The book of life, flip a page. Yo, they asking me how old, we live in the same age. I feel the rage of a million niggas locked inside a cage. At exactly which point do you start to realize that life without knowledge is death in disguise. That's why knowledge yourself is like life after death. Apply it to your life, let destiny manifest. Different days, same confusion. We're gonna take this hip-hop shit and keep it moving. Shed a little light, now y'all blooming like a flower with the power of the evidence. Voices and drums, original instruments in the flesh, presently presenting my representation. With that what?
Knowledge itself.
Determination. 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 With that what? History is now, the present. So count your blessings, cause time can't define the essence. But you're stressing over time and you follow the Roman calendar. These people in the corner like Attica. You can bet they trying to lock you down like Attica. The African diaspora represents strength and numbers. A giant can't slumber forever. I know you gotta get that cheddar, whatever. And yo, I heard you twice the first time, money, get it together. You must be history, you repeating yourself out of the pages. You keeping yourself depleting your spiritual wealth. That quick cash, you'll get your ass quick fast in houses of detention. Inner city concentration camp where no one pays attention or mentions the ascension of death till nothing's left. The young gifted in black is sprung addicted to crack. All my people, where you at? Cause y'all ain't here. And your heroes using your mind as a canvas to paint fear with broad brush strokes and tales of incarceration. You get out of jail with that knowledge of self-determination, standing ovation, because you put the hue in human, cause and effect, affect everything you doing. That's why I got love in the face of hate. Hand steady, so the lines and the mental illustration is straight. The thought you had don't even contemplate. Infinite like figure eight, there's no escape. From that what?
Knowledge,
determination. From that what?
Knowledge,
determination. From that what?
Knowledge,
determination. From that what?
Knowledge,
determination.
Yes, yes.